So relatedness, you know, isn't that what we do? We relate to others in all of these different ways, the individuals and their personalities and who they're manifesting at this moment. We relate to how they're, one way or the other, you know, we can relate to it with, you know, a lot of discomfort with it. But nonetheless, we're in a kind of a stimulus response as the other person in that way. So we relate to others. So much of our dukkha and our sukha is in our relating to others. And then we relate to environments. So traffic. How do we relate to being in traffic? How do we relate to a beautiful day? How do we relate when the fires have smoked up the area and where the air quality? We have a relatedness. We have a subjective experience of the objectiveness of something that has happened. So the smoke is very objective. It's very objective. The way someone is treating us is coming from their own subjectivity and also subject to how we're interpreting it, which makes this much more complicated. But in the end, someone has said something or treating us in some way or vibing something, and we're relating to it one way or the other. We're just saying, I don't know what this is. This isn't my business. Or we're going, I can't believe she's talking to me this way. Or talking so much. or using such unskillful language or whatever it might be. We're in relationship. We are relating creatures in that way. And then, of course, we relate to ourselves. We relate to ourselves. How often, when we're relating to ourselves, we are in a judging mode of relating. How does that work out, you know? Or we're in a comparing mode. Or we're really trying to fix it. We haven't stayed present long enough to go, well, okay, what's really to be fixed here? We're already rejected it. We're relating it by something about us or our behavior, something that we're rejecting before we ever have time to know it, to know its origins, to see how it feels to us, what else is going on with us. We get reactive. The relating is taking a reactive form. So there's not a receiving it so that we haven't a felt sense of it. The felt sense so often brings its own pause. And that pause is where we discover what is skillfully relating to something where we're being reactive. So over and over again, we go through our day relating to inner stimuli, exterior coming through the senses, including the mind itself, and then environmental stimulus. And this is the sense of well-being comes from the manner of relating. So if you're feeling kind, I'll refer to me. If I am feeling kind towards myself and kind towards others, the amount of experience I can have that's unpleasant is quite large. And it's just unpleasant. But if I'm not in a settled state of mind, even if after all these years of practice, I don't react in words or anything else to that unpleasantness, nonetheless, the contraction is there. And the impatience, the getting exhausted by this kind of reactive energy, that it will wear us out. Again, I'm saying all this now for a number of reasons, including the way our society, our culture is right now, where we're in such alienation, and the economics of the time is so challenging in many ways for many people. And the disparities in so many ways are so large, you know, and we can want to address all of those, and we can address them as best we can through our votes, through whatever jobs we have, through our own political actions or organizational actions, or even actions within your family unit, the immediate family unit or the larger family unit. So we can address as we can, but that's coming from an ideal way. That's coming from our wisdom and compassion, not coming from reactivity. So the wisdom and compassion, when there's harmful behavior, we want to stop the harmful behavior, but we're not trying to force someone else into our reality, how we view it, that our subjective opinion, based on our subjective experience, that we're not trying to force into. And so how do we relate in the face of diffidence, of difficulty, in the face of confusion? There's so much confusion. And we use our mindfulness. We use our mindfulness. We are observing the experience in a way that has a witnessing quality. So there's the knowing of the experience and as a cognition, and then there's the witnessing of it as a felt experience. It's not the one. We have to establish this whole huge framework to remember to be present. It's that we have some way that we get as an attitudinal habit. This arriving is an attitude. It's a value. It's an expression of how you wish to be by utilizing this arriving sequence. Again, you're preparing yourself not just for your sits, but you'd be preparing yourself in the first thing in the morning. Every morning, I go through the arriving sequence. It's become more important than my metta that I also do every morning. But it's just become so important because I really see that when I am available for the day, then metta is far more accessible than when I have not prepared myself. So there's an orientation to how we want to be. There's a setting a tone in the mind-heart before we begin our day, certainly before we listen to the news and read about this and that, or watch the videos of this and that, you know, and so much heartbreak, so much, you know, uncertainty. And we're available for a wise relating to that heartbreak, for that uncertainty. And we know that we can't, if we get immersed in it, immersed and entangled in it, that it doesn't lead anywhere. Your heart can be touched without your getting entangled. The Buddha talked quite often about being entangled. That's how human beings get so entangled. It's taken me a lot of years to really have a what I would consider a strong sense. I'm not claiming any kind of absolute or at all understanding of that, but a strong understanding of the ways that we get enmeshed and we get entangled. And it can be at such a distance. I can read about cruelty in a war going on, you know, thousands of miles away from me, and the knowing what that in that kind of cruelty is, because I do know cruelty, I can get entangled in that, which depresses me. It has a depressive effect, meaning on the immune system, on the flow of the energy in your body, the robustness of the vital body, your availability of your heart, the clarity of mind for decision making, available to for caring. All of that can happen from something that's happening thousands of miles away. So that I would present, and it's tough. It is tough, but if we identify with it in such a way that we are reacting to it, then we become part of the problem. You see, we have moved into the suffering. We're now adding to the suffering. Immediately, we're the ones who are suffering more, but. In the course of time, as we're less available, others suffer from our suffering. So one way to understand that when we learn to not get entangled, not get enmeshed, to have this available aligned, so that our relatingness is not through entanglement, but rather through this wisdom and compassion, then we're reducing the suffering in the world. Not just ours, but ours doesn't count as less. It's just that others are going to have less suffering too. And you go, how small that is, that difference. And how small those differences are that happen if 100 times a day, a couple billion people a day, then just how small would that be? Not so small, not so small. And do we really believe that somehow it's going to happen all at once everywhere? Or is it going to be happening in small communities, individuals working with their practice, our understanding just slowly growing, and we be with like-minded people so that we really come to have faith in this priority of having a way of relating that is non-harmful, but is in fact helpful, without trying to define it, without saying, well, it means you've got to do this, or you're supposed to do that, or blah, blah, all those prescriptions, but rather the felt sense of it. And that felt sense does include our willingness to carry the suffering. I don't mean carry in the sense of cling, but there is no denying the first two noble truths. There is suffering, and there is a cause of suffering, and that's ours to carry. We're not seeking to be above that, but to have a wise relationship to those truths. And of course, we use the fourth noble truth of the Eightfold Path as the overall map of how we get there. So in this regard, I wanted to take time tonight to receive any questions that kind of relates to how you're relating. Is there a struggle you're having in relating to some aspect or many aspects of your experience that somehow the Dhamma, the way you're utilizing the Dhamma right now, it's not it's not feeling effective for you, or you just have doubt, or you have a question, but what about this? This seems to be the exception, and so forth. Anything like that. I like doing this much more in person, but we're not in person. We're here. And I this is partially because I want to be in community with you. I want to be relating to you individually and not just, you know, as a group and, you know, faces on a screen. So I've known some of you for so many, many years now. So it just, you can use your physical, push the hand, the react, whatever that is that does the hand. And, or you can raise your physical hand like that. Corey.
Hi, Philip. Thank you. I wonder if you just speak a little bit to worry. You know, these times do cause a lot of worry, and sometimes the worry creeps up on you and you don't even realize it's there. And then you notice you're biting your nails, or you notice that you're reactive to somebody. And sometimes it happens more at night. Anyway, do you have any thoughts about working with
these times? Yes, it's really worrisome right now. It's really worrisome. And yeah, uncertainty has grown. And when our minds do not like things being uncertain, we're much better in some ways with something being bad, but at least we know it's bad rather than the uncertainty. And so you're, the question becomes, okay, I'm going to get worried about things, particularly at night, if that's true for you. And how am I going to relate to this whole experience? I want to have a wise relationship. I don't want this to happen night after night, and I don't ever deal with it. I don't come into any kind of a deliberate relationship to it, a kind of discerning relationship to it. That doesn't seem right. That's like wasting your practice, you see. And so there's a deliberateness to you're choosing to, I'm going to work with worrisomeness, with worry. And I'm going to see when I start to, am I taking what a worry and acting as though it's for sure going to happen? Am I falling into a mind train of worry, where one worry is causing the next worry? Is my body getting uneasy? My nervous system getting uneasy. And then, so I'm triggering that by my worry. And then I may forget about that particular worry, but now my body is in this cycling of this. It's waking me up in the middle of the night or whatever it may be. My evenings, I'm jumpy. I got to lose myself in television or eating or something because I'm jumpy or whatever it may be for any given person. So if you say, okay, I can't stop worry, but I want to have a wise relationship with my worry, what would that look like? So it might be that I'm just going to give you some examples, and you can give me some examples. Like you may name worrying. Oh, this is worry. Oh, and you have compassion for the worry in mind. You might start to go, is this worry, is my pattern of worrying based in, that tend to be about things that are truly to be worried about in some way, or is it a general anxiety of worry? Because it's in the air right now that we do this. Excuse me for a second. I'm sipping a cough, a suppressant. So, and then you might get interested, well, how do I contain my worry so it doesn't spread to, you know, someone else? And which of the tools do I use? When I'm in this worry, do I do compassion practice, literally the formal compassion practice, or met or metta, whatever it may be. So any does that bring up some thoughts of your own about how you could work with this?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I haven't done compassion practice in a while, but what I have been working with is, I was reading recently, was expanding the circle of acceptance, mm-hmm. and to allow the worry to be just part of who I am and an acceptance of that to start with. Because mm-hmm. often I jump right to fix it, right to like, you know, that common...
That's right.
This is off and I need to do something about it. And so I usually will start with that. But I think also just even asking the question was a way for me to kind of just bring a little bit more mindfulness into it and some intentionality before it even begins, you know?
Well, noticing that the judging or I should not be doing this. Oh, I didn't used to worry this much comparing or the fixing as you just named that. So you're discerning that there is worry and what is my wise relationship to worry, but you're not like thinking, oh, I got to fix it. And acceptance is one thing. Choosing, the world is like this, I choose to know the world the way it is. If the world is uncertain, I choose to know the world is uncertain. If the world has, is whatever you're thinking about at the time. If there's cruelty in the world, I choose to know the cruelty rather than deny it because I wish to be present for what's true. That kind of a thing. The right effort of the Eightfold Path, where you use wise effort to, you don't keep feeding the worry because then the worry become, you're in an eddy. So you already know that you can get into that eddy, like you're kayaking. So you deliberately interrupt. And, sometimes I'll say, Mara, I see you, but I don't so much worry on a personal level as that my heart breaks, you know? And what I have to work with is that I just, it is heartbreaking, but my heart being broken in a collapsed way does nobody any good. So, the aligning is such a great protection for that from happening. So thank you, Nancy. Are you unmuting?
Hi.
Hi, good to see you.
Yeah, you too, Philip. As I listen to you talk, I want to cultivate a wise relationship with my daughter is living in a city that I was just there for a week. And for the first 24 hours, I was just seized with, I hate this place. She's going to be having a baby next month. I'm going to be spending a lot more time there. She's happy. And I am, and I've met some lovely people, but I feel judgmental of the place. I don't like it. And I wish that my granddaughter wouldn't, I don't know that they'll live there forever, but they might for a long time. Anyway, I want to work with my own reactivity. Yeah. And I'm not talking to my daughter about it because it would not.
No.
No.
This is such a great opportunity. This is such a great opportunity. If you let loose of your view, you say, "This is I have this reactivity, and it can it doesn't have to go away, but I'm not going to hold it. If it was this bag here of lemon honey drops, But the last bag had all sorts of bad stuff in it rather than good thing. I put it down here. It won't go away just because I put it down, but I'm no longer holding it. And what happens when you're holding that reactivity? You are slowing down your maturation into a loving space where, you know, it's not your preference to be in that city, but you don't care about that at all. What you really care about is you get to be with your grandchild, you know, and you love your daughter, and you get to be, and your daughter wants you to be there. And then you just, it just doesn't, it's not that you change your mind about it. You change where you're placing the emphasis. You just don't care about that city anymore right now. You're going to be available to them as much as they want you to be available, and whatever way, and your contentment is being there in that relatedness, you see, because you're at this point, that city, you're having trouble relating to it, but that's not your priority at all. And it's so small compared to what you get to have with your daughter and your grandchild. So small. I mean, like, wow, would I am I really letting that throw me off? That can't be true. And you're kind to yourself about it. You're not mad at yourself about it. But boy, you know, I want to straighten this out. And I've been through this just recently with a few people around their child and their child's child. Their son or daughter, and then they're having a baby. And so I've had this little chat with others, and it is you have such an opportunity to discover just being, because the love will allow you to just be. You're very fortunate.
Thank you so much. That was so helpful. Thank you. And yes, it's true. Thanks, Philip.
Okay, so I don't know which of the two of you it is. Okay, please.
Philip, I just wanted to thank you so much. I mean, the being arriving and being available, the meditation that you did was so touching and just opened up my heart. And then, you know, just your talk, just what comes up for me is that it's really the truth. What you speak the truth, and when you speak the truth, it touches me deeply. And I just want to thank you.
So, you know, I've not been interested in theory. And I'm just not. I'm interested in Dharma on the street of life, and how it really is on the street of life. And what I have learned is what I've learned from others, and then gone and practiced for myself, and then just from practicing on the street of life. I don't really have much theories about anything, but I do know how to some skillful means for relating to the street of life, to be dharmically related to the street of life. And I'm now aged into that's all I care about. And I don't have so what does my heart good is seeing others, just like what I was talking about, the preciousness of relating to your child and your grandchild, and that there's a whole mind space that can arise that's so liberating, that's way beyond, like it'll be an insight that can arise from that's not just, oh, I'm warm and cozy with my family and all this, I'm grateful for that, but it's like, whoa, this is the mind state that I've been looking for. And so instead of going around and looking, I actually stopped and received long enough in a wise relating way. So that's about all I'm interested in now.
Yeah, very good. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Liz.
Don't say it that way. Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you. I am exhausted from teaching two courses, which you helped me to get to teach. And I have examined every nook and cranny of my personality for a year and a half with a small group of folks and 2,500 of us all over the world. I've taught two classes, which almost killed me. My sense of responsibility was overwhelming. All I wanted to do was to give to these people, to give them what I thought they needed intuitively. And I think I was right. But it was so difficult for me because it wasn't my natural personality to do this. And it was such a struggle. I wanted to do it. I wanted to change. I wanted to give. I did it. Woo!
Yeah, congratulations.
But it did almost kill me. My sense of anxiety was so strong. My sense of responsibility, me teaching the Dharma, oh my God, you know, how dare I do this? And you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I feel I've just completed my teaching assignments. And I'm wrapping it up, but I'm exhausted and I'm surprised at how exhausted I am. And I don't, right now I'm not feeling nourished by the Dharma. I can't go on retreat. So I just noticed this now, how exhausted I am from changing my personality radically and giving so much, which I wanted to do, and I'm so glad I did. You know, and it's come very late in life, though, I must say. And I'm glad that I did it. I'm so glad I did it, but I'm so tired.
That fatigue, be interested in how you relate to that fatigue. Treat the fatigue as a natural response, but don't think you know the dimensions of it, that you don't know that. So you have a wise relationship to the fatigue because it's fatigue and not just because. So you're creating more space around it than just, oh, I'm tired because I did this and this was really hard, because it was really hard and it was tired. But there's other things that go on too that's adding to this fatigue. So you go, okay, I'm just going to deal with fatigue. And then I'm just going to stay in appreciation with what I did, is my suggestion to you.
Uh-huh.
Because this fatigue, once it gets established, has its own life. So however it got there is really, and once it's there, it can do all sorts of things to our body, our physical body, our vital body, and our emotional body. So we give yourself breaks, rest. What will renew it? I know you've said before that you've had trouble being nursed since you can't be on the land. But then, are there some people that you can be, you know, online with? Some of these weekly Sangha things or something that would nourish
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
And you read, yes. Do things like this and be very deliberate. There's this, you're deliberately relating to yourself in a renewing way here.
Yes.
So let's just don't let this sort of wander around with it. You're not demanding the fatigue going away, but you are balancing the fatigue with acts of caring, wise compassion.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I need to nourish myself. And I've been through an extraordinary life-changing experience.
Yes.
And
that will take care of itself is the good thing. If you're not holding on to it, it will work its way in your system in really wholesome ways. It's only when we get in the way that it's when something, because I know the experience to which you refer, and it will work to replenish you in its own way. It doesn't need your thoughts so much, but just that great gratitude that you referred to, that's very wise to keep feeling.
Enormous gratitude and accepting what the changes that I've been through are monumental. So that's part of the fatigue of accepting the change.
Yeah, Thank you. Thank you. And Guy.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much, Philip, for that nice meditation. Before I could find an ink pen and write this down, you mentioned something about when you wake up in the morning and you immediately turn to what I call, I belong to a 12-step program. And I used to have something that I practiced, which was the solution. But you mentioned a couple things there that I kind of forgot now, but I wanted to write them down because I've been a professional musician most of my life. And my hours seemed to be like from noon till 3 a.m. during my career, whether I was teaching or performing. But trying to get used to this retirement and earlier hours, I wake up sometimes and don't remember I'm in the solution till 4 p.m. I'm trying to remember some advisory suggestions that you might have, because I know I can have right view and right intention, but I won't remember them till 3 or 4 p.m.
Well, that's the value of doing it, of doing the arriving sequence, which begins with arriving here and now. And that results in establishing mindfulness to the degree that you feel yourself available. So right there, but at the start of the day, you are available to the moment. You're present enough. You've got enough presence and you are present moment to moment. You can just watch your breath and then, oh, now my mind's wandering. Okay. You're present to your experience. So you're participating and the flow of your experience rather than it just going on its own. And then aligning, because there's when we are available, we can be available to we can be unskillful in as to what we become available for and things that are not helpful. We can also be available for things that in themselves are quite beguiling, quite delicious, but they actually, without being alignment, can lead us to places we don't want to be. So, and that can be on a behavioral level, on a emotional level, and on a mystical level, mysterious level. So, therefore, I really stress the importance of aligning. I really stress it. And the more you're going to meditate, the more you want to be aligned. In my right.
It seems like you're right. To what level am I available? Sounds what I don't practice, because I expect to be at the top level right off the bat with only one eye open, you know. Mm-hmm. And to what level is the best?
Yeah, there's a website called ninebodies.com, and there's other recorded meditations of me doing this arriving sequence there.
What's the name again?
Nine Bodies, N-I-N-E, ninebodies.com, Nine Bodies. Or, I'm sorry, there's a better one now. I just forgot for this moment, of Dharma Ground. That will be easier for you to find, is dharmaground.org. I've said everything wrong on that first one, including saying calm. So dharmaground.org.
Would you like me to put in the chat the arriving sequence playlist that we made for you that has 4 arriving sequences?
That would be good.
Is that okay, Philip, for me to share?
Let me think about that.
Or if you do, I can put the link that's the Dharma Ground that has arriving sequences at the beginning.
All right. Well, just go ahead and send a couple of links.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. One more, and then we're going to do our announcements. Okay, Marian. You're going to have to unmute also.
Since I've spoken to you a long time, I have the illness that I have has gotten much progressively worse, very, very downhill. And I'm in palliative care, and I mostly am in the house, housebound, 24/7 caregiver. And I'm having trouble accepting losses. Almost every day there's another loss, big loss. Spreading, the pain spreads to a different part of the body. The next day spreads to another part of the body. I could live 10 more years. And so it's not the same, it's not the issues that I thought would be, like getting old and getting sick and dying. It's supposed to be different. I know that it's a, what I'm saying is I'm being sarcastic.
You're muted, Philip.
Philip, you're muted.
Philip?
I really get what you're saying and how that works, because I've worked with other people in your situation. And when I was talking about this being aware that you're, that, you know, that there's awareness present, whatever's being known, there's an awareness that's allowing that to happen. And, the Rinpoches will say that in the face of this kind of the continuity of pain, that the refuge is in that awareness, that you become much more aware of the awareness, which itself is not having the suffering. It's that's not where the suffering is. It's the suffering's in that, the what they call vijnana consciousness of, you know, if something body ceases to work and now there's a new pain or a new thing. If you move, you get, and so, but this, that which knows is not actually involved in the suffering in the same way. And, that is one of the ways we learn to let loose, around dying. And so, and I'm speaking to you as an adult here, that we are all going to die. And so if you're going to have to endure this anyway, is there a way that you could look at it that you would be saying, okay, I've got to pay this price. This is all going to happen whether I want it or not. So how can I, where can I place my attention that will bring some benefit either immediate or in a longer term way? So that you, to really explore, I would not have you have this as your practice, but you, this is your practice, you know? So it's silly to pretend something different. That's, you don't pretend on the street of life. It doesn't get you anywhere. And so, so I'm really being serious. It's not an easy practice. But you're not in an easy situation. So you learned, you can say, you know, I'm having this pain. I'm aware of this pain, and I'm aware that I'm aware of this pain. You go back to this capacity. There's a capacity of knowing that I can learn to make as my object of meditation, that I can more and more over, if it's 10 years, an incredible amount, be resting in that knowing. And let events be as they are. Lots of stories of people being transformed by that. More monks than lay people, but that's because, you know, we have more distractions. So that's my grown up suggestion. And then the more regular suggestion would be loving kindness practice towards yourself, towards that body pain, to where, and compassion for that, which is when you feel the loss of one more restriction. That would be a more standard response. It's tough. It's tough. So it being really tough is like this. I don't want to carry this, but it is mine to carry, so I will carry it. So we need to stop there and do the announcements now.